seeking shelter and help and a new life. She continued with tears welling up in her eyes. I immediately began to think of the rows and rows of clothes and shoes sitting idly in my closet at home. I began to consider how much beauty and dignity those articles of clothing could bestow upon those women, how they could be used by the women for job interviews or providing a splash of confidence on their first day of work. And in that moment, Joshua, I found everything I needed to finally declutter my closet. The process wasn't just about me trying to improve my life anymore. It was about using my excess, unused clothing to become a blessing to others. For the clothes that you will minimize, the usual categories of trash, recycle, sell, and donate apply. But especially in this case, I think it's usually best to donate it, just as Stacy did. That strategy does good for others and gets the excess clothing out of your house quickly. Generosity in this case is not just the byproduct of minimalism, it is also the motivation for it. Take any used clothing that's in good condition to one of the national chain nonprofits or a local nonprofit that will use or resell it. Get a receipt and deduct the value from your taxes. In the United States, IRS Publication 561 gives guidelines for determining the value of donated clothing and other goods. For textiles that can no longer be salvaged, you may have to put them in the trash, but there are also a number of recycling opportunities. Some organizations recycle old textiles and break down the material into insulation products, carpet padding, paper, or yarn. Some pet shelters will use the old materials for cleaning materials or bedding. And some Goodwill stores will accept your worn-out clothing and sell it to salvage brokers or make it into industrial wipes. Before we leave the topic of clothing and how much of it we store in our homes, let's consider one special place some homes have. Its name is mud. A mud room is a way station between inside and outside. For rainy days, muddy days, or snowy days in particular, it's a valuable place to have in a home to put on your coat, boots, hat, and gloves, or to take them off again. A mudroom typically has a bench for sitting on when dressing with your outerwear, and it may be equipped with cabinets, shelves, and coat hooks or hangers on a rod. It's usually positioned at the back or side door, though sometimes at the front door. Not every house has a mudroom, but if yours has one, you know that it is basically utilitarian. It stores outerwear and keeps mud and dirt from being tracked into the house. But it can also have some warm memories associated with it. This might be where mom helped her little ones get bundled up to go out and make their first snowman. This could be where you greet guests and take their coats when they come over for your annual Christmas Eve party. To make your mudroom a place of charm and convenience, rather than of clutter and frustration, pull out every object in it and decide what you can do with it. Have some items settled here that don't really belong? Relocate them. How about decorations that now seem to your newly minimalistic eyes to be excessive? Eliminate them. Are there clothing items that duplicate the purpose of other items? More than one coat for each season per person, for example? Or that don't fit the wearer anymore? Or that just never get used? Is there furniture that is just taking up space? Or are there other large items getting in the way of the room's function more than contributing to it? Donate them to others who will be grateful for them. Once you've settled on what to keep in your mudroom, the key becomes tidiness. Make sure everything you keep is where it belongs. Dad's parka on a hook. The kids' snow boots under the bench. Hats on the top shelf, umbrella in the stand, or whatever you decide. Day after day, as you make your stop in this way station, you'll love how much better your mudroom works for you. And you'll notice how your kids will get better at keeping it tidy when everything has a specific home. Our home in Vermont didn't have a mudroom, but it did have an entryway with a coat closet. After we minimized the coat closet, I noticed it got used more often. When we had to cram our coats into the closet every time we wanted to hang something, it was easy to just throw them on the floor. But when there was space in the closet, hanging coats was easier, quicker, and happened more often. Same with storing shoes on the floor of the coat closet. When countless things were piled up because the shelves were already too full of other stuff, nobody used the floor of the coat closet for shoes. But there was a noticeable change when we minimized that closet. My kids at the time were quite young, and yet did a good job of putting things away inside it. Minimalist home value. Being yourself. The ancient philosopher Lao Tzu is credited with saying, "Care about what other people think, and you will always be their prisoner." Minimizing your clothing collection is not about giving up on looking your best, but it is about not trying to impress others through slavishly following fashion. That's like chasing the wind. Today's fashions look better on airbrushed models than on real people. Buying clothes is costly. Even if you get them and they look good, soon they'll seem dated. And maybe they never really express who you are. Our clothes speak. They say something about who we are and what we believe and how we want to be thought of. Today's latest fashions may say something that's consistent with another person's identity, but not yours. Even if they seem appropriate for you, fashions are going to change in no time. It's much better to stick to clothes that are comfortable, that give you confidence, and that look good on you, regardless of whether they're showing up on the covers of fashion magazines these days. Wearing a simple and iconic wardrobe lets you be the star of your life's drama, not your clothes. The real you. A survey conducted by IKEA in Canada reported that about a third of customers were more satisfied after cleaning out their closets than after sex. I can't promise you those kinds of results, but I think you'll be surprised by how much of a relief it is to go to your closet and find it spacious and orderly. Your clothes closets don't have to be a source of stress. When you've minimized the closets, their contents don't need a lot of updating. Your clothing selection doesn't remind you of times when you weighed less, or false personas you once tried on, or money you blew at clothing shops. You don't have to waste time sorting through the options and asking yourself every day what you feel like wearing. A minimized closet makes for easier living. Even more so, I know you're going to love walking out the door wearing your own iconic fashion made up of clothes that fit well, flatter you, and are as comfortable as an old friendship. Doesn't that sound lovely? To be confident about your own personal style, as opposed to worrying about whether the fashion has changed without you? The you whom you present to the world is the real you, comfortable in your own skin and in your own clothing. Minimizing checklist. How will you know when you've cleared out enough clutter and excess from your clothes closets and mudrooms? Ask yourself these questions. For the master bedroom closet, is my closet filled only with clothes I love to wear? Are there any clothes in my closet left over from a previous season of life that I still need to remove? Does my clothes closet empower me to make quick, confident decisions about what to wear in the morning? Have I left enough space in my closet for my clothes to hang freely? For the other closets in the home, Does everything in this closet belong and have a designated space? Are the other members of my household catching on to the advantages of having a neat and streamlined closet? For the mudroom, is the coat closet or mudroom a tidy, efficient stopping place between indoors and outdoors? Is my family inclined to put things away because there is room for them now? Chapter 6. Clean Sweep. Decluttering the bathrooms and laundry room. Now we come to spaces that have some of the humblest purposes in the home, keeping our bodies and our clothes clean. Our bathrooms and laundry room might not seem important, but since we use them so frequently, letting them stay cluttered would mean embracing aggravation and inefficiency every day. Minimizing these spaces restores their ability to fulfill their intended purposes. And at least in the case of the bathroom, eliminating clutter can give us a feeling of peace that calms our spirits. If we are to believe some advertisements, the ideal master bathroom is a vast space with gleaming tile, shining fixtures, and spouting fountains, where beautiful people pamper themselves or luxuriate in baths amid drooping palms and flickering candles. None of us actually have a bathroom like that, but we can still dream of retreating to one that offers us a sense of privacy and repose. With that in mind, the makeover your bathroom needs is not more square footage and newer fixtures. It is a removal of all the excess stuff that's giving it that messy, distracting look. I don't know how big your master bathroom is, but get rid of the clutter, and I guarantee it will seem more spacious. You'll begin to enjoy greater calm and relaxation right in the bathroom you've already got. In the old days, before we minimized our bathroom, I used to get annoyed when my hands knocked over a tube of antiperspirant sitting beside my sink, or a bottle of hair gel fell off the shelf when I reached into our bathroom cabinet. That kind of thing hardly ever happens anymore. I can calmly, yet quickly, do whatever I came to the bathroom to do. In other words, every day I appreciate the benefits of bathroom minimizing. You too can enjoy the benefits of made-over bathrooms and laundry room in your home through minimizing. It's an experience. We love our bathrooms. In the United States, even though the average household size has been gradually shrinking for decades, the number of bathrooms in the typical home has continued to increase. In 1973, the norm was one bathroom. By 2012, the average number of bathrooms in a single-family U.S. home had risen to 2.56 bathrooms. Most Britons and Aussies also look for homes with at least two bathrooms. Referring to the number of bathrooms is even a part of how we describe our homes. When you start house hunting, you say to your real estate agent, "We're looking for a three-bedroom, two-bath house." British bathroom designer Edward Lewis pointed out that we spend 1.5 years of our lives in bathrooms. He went on to say, "The bathroom is the one room in which we are able to finally switch off from all that is going on around us and simply be alone with our thoughts and reflect on the day. A chance to relax and wash away life's little stresses. And above all, where inspiration strikes. It's an experience." Keeping in mind the importance of the bathroom in our daily pattern, I can think of at least three benefits to a minimalist bathroom. One, it's usually a relatively small space and yet is one where we spend a considerable amount of time. Clutter in a small space only seems like more clutter. Two, bathrooms get dirty quickly, and not just dust, but grimy, sticky, gross stuff. A minimized bathroom is easier to clean, which makes using the room more enjoyable for everyone. 3. When we minimize here, we remove some stress in the morning from getting ready to meet the world. And, as Lewis said, we create a space that helps us wind down and relax at the end of the day when we're preparing for bedtime. Your bathrooms have a greater significance to your family than their size would indicate, and you'll be glad when you've transformed them through decluttering. Here are some homemade cleaning products courtesy of Katie Wells, Wellness Mama. All-natural, all-purpose cleaner. Combine 1 teaspoon borax, 1/2 teaspoon washing soda, and 1 teaspoon liquid Castile soap in a spray bottle. Add 2 cups warm distilled water. Add a few drops of the essential oils of your choice, such as lemon, lavender, or orange. Put the spray top on the bottle and shake well. Use on bathroom surfaces, kitchen counters, and elsewhere. Ready-to-go laundry soap. Grate an unscented bar of soap, such as Dr. Bronner's or Ivory, until finely ground. In a large bowl, mix bar of grated soap, 1 cup washing soda, and 1 cup borax. Store in a closed container. Use between 2 tablespoons and 1/4 cup per laundry load. Step-by-step minimizing for your bathrooms. As you go about minimizing your bathrooms, your approach may vary from one to another. For your master bathroom, if you live alone, you have to please only yourself with what you choose to minimize. But if you have a partner, you'd better consult him or her before decluttering this room. You're probably going to go for a combination of cleaning efficiency and spa-like peacefulness for this room. For a kid's bathroom, you probably want a room that is easy to use and reflects a little of the kids' personalities. Ask them for their input on what they want to keep or are willing to get rid of. Space can be tight in kids' bathrooms, so every item matters. For your powder room or guest bathroom, imagine what your guests would like to find there. Probably you want it to be simple, easy to clean, and ready at a moment's notice. Step 1. Sort through your medicine cabinet. All of us have some place where we keep prescription medicines, over-the-counter remedies, and the like. It might be behind a mirror in the bathroom, on shelves in the linen closet, or in drawers under the bathroom counter. On average, U.S. households spend $486 on prescription drugs and $338 on over-the-counter products every year. Our medicine storage space is filled with everything from pain relief pills to bandages to bottles of sunscreen to throat lozenges to antiseptic spray to thermometers to cotton balls to antacids to skin lotion and more. Wherever you store this stuff, pull it all out and methodically go through it. Safely dispose of any prescription meds you're no longer using. Find out the preferred methods for disposing of those drugs in your area. For example, some pharmacies take back unused medications. Similarly, get rid of any over-the-counter medications or other products that have expired. Regardless of expiration date, get rid of anything that seems like it has gone bad, changed color, smell, or taste. Make sure you're not mixing different products in the same container. Discard all unmarked containers. Test medical devices and eliminate any that no longer work. Get rid of all unnecessary duplicates and anything you know you'll never use. With most minimized items in the house, I recommend donating, selling, and recycling as removal options. With medicine cabinet items, however, these are not good options. Get rid of these items completely. Organize what's left from your medicine cabinet so you can find what you need quickly and will know when it's time to restock. Store the items in a safe place where young children and curious visitors won't get at them. If any products can be damaged by humidity, place them in a sealed container for protection. In fact, you may want to move the entire collection to a private area outside your bathroom so that environmental damage and unauthorized browsing aren't concerns at all. Step 2. Pare down your beauty and grooming supplies. I don't know if it's more about vanity or marketing, but increasingly, both men and women worldwide are buying products with the intention of making themselves look better. GoodHousekeeping.com reported, the average woman owns a whopping 40 makeup products. Even more shocking, on average, women typically only use 5 of those 40 products, meaning we allow 87% of our collection to go to waste without regular use. A UK newspaper reported 300% growth in sales of men's grooming products in 2015. It further said, the top 10 boom markets for men's toiletries since 2010 include Brazil, South Korea, the US, Germany, India, and yes, the UK. In China, another of that top 10, year-on-year growth has exceeded 20% over the same period. To minimize your beauty products, start by taking all of them out of the cabinets or drawers where you store them. Group things by kind, both beauty tools, styling irons, microdermabrasion devices, shavers, hairbrushes, manicure kits, and so on. And beauty products, eyeliners, foundation, hairsprays, anti-aging lotions, perfumes, aftershave, and the rest. Respectively, these are your beauty aid durable goods and consumables. Eliminate unnecessary duplicates. Throw out anything that's broken or old. Although cosmetics don't usually carry expiration dates, using makeup, especially eye makeup, too long can carry health risks. Get rid of items you don't use, such as an eyebrow pencil that is darker than your hair, or a cologne whose scent you don't care for. Pare down the number of lipstick shades you keep on hand. Favor cosmetics that can be used for more than one purpose. For example, some foundations can also be used as primers and concealers. A few beauty and grooming products are toxic and should be disposed of in an environmentally responsible way. For example, the experts recommend that nail polish be treated as hazardous waste. When you're done minimizing, wash your storage containers and organize what you're going to keep. Step 3. Make kids' bathrooms age and stage appropriate. As kids grow up, they need different products in their bathroom. A girl, for instance, might go from keeping a lot of plastic hair accessories and scented soap in the bathroom to wanting tween-styled hair products and inexpensive jewelry to wanting the same kinds of makeup mom uses. Just as their clothing needs change so rapidly that it's surprising to us grown-ups, so their bathroom needs change as well. Yet sometimes we store things in kids' bathrooms long after they are no longer being used. If you have kids, go through their bathrooms with their help and remove any unnecessary items, especially things they don't need or want anymore. For example, if your son is too old for bath toys, get rid of them. Sometimes we get so used to seeing things in the bathroom that we forget we no longer need them. Your kids will appreciate the fact that the bathroom cleaning chore will be easier for them as soon as there is less clutter, even if they never mention it. Step 4. Reduce your bathroom cleaning products to the basics. The bathroom is one of the rooms in the house where we tend to store some of our cleaning supplies. Take all of these out of your bathroom and decide which ones you really need. A few are obvious. You're probably going to want to have toilet bowl cleaner and glass cleaner, for example. But see how few products you can keep on hand and still get the cleaning job done. Marketers often try to sell us cleaning products by touting their targeted purposes. But a few basic cleaners may be all you really need. If you've got some specialized cleaners in your bathroom, test them. Use them as directed and see if they do a better job for you than an all-purpose cleaner. If not, you don't need them. Gimmicky products are usually too good to be true and just end up cluttering our space. If you've got the do-it-yourself spirit, you may want to create your own simple cleaners. By doing this, you will save money, will know exactly what chemicals you're using around your house, and can make more of the solution whenever you need it. Step 5. Reduce the number of your towels. Towels are slow to wear out, and so over time we tend to accumulate a lot of them. Go through your selection of bath towels, hand towels, and washcloths. How many do you really need? Minimize to that level and get rid of the rest. Reducing the diversity of the styles and colors of your bathroom linen gives the room a cleaner look. Here's a tip. If you keep smaller towels, they'll take up less space in your laundry. The largest bath towels are actually called bath sheets. Do you really need a sheet to dry off with? Step 6. Clear off the countertops. The most visible clutter in your bathroom is probably on the countertop. Maybe you've got an electric toothbrush sitting there at the ready. Maybe you left a hairbrush lying on its back. Is the toothpaste tube oozing goo? Is that a plugged-in blow dryer sitting dangerously beside the sink? Oops! A part of the problem with counter clutter may be that you've chosen to leave things on the counter because it seems more efficient to have them at hand. Here is the convenience fallacy again. It actually takes very little time to remove a toiletry or beauty item from a drawer and put it back after you're done with it. And keeping so many things out not only creates visual distraction, but also makes it harder to root through everything that's clustered on the countertop. If you've gotten rid of things in your drawers and cabinets and under the sink, you can put more things away and keep that counter beautifully clean. Step 7. Declutter around the bathtub and in the shower. Soap, shampoo, conditioner, bath salts, bath foam, oils, sponges, candles. The rims and shelves around a tub or shower tend to get cluttered with many items like these. Go through your collection and see what you can get rid of or put away more neatly. You'll like having the extra space and the ease of cleaning. The number of products we need to clean our bodies is really very small. In a day and age when we do less manual labor and therefore sweat less than earlier generations, it's especially ironic that we buy so many more bathing products. Don't make cleaning your body overcomplicated and clutter up your precious space. Your home should be the antidote to stress, not the cause of it. Peter Walsh. Hashtag minimalist home. What to do with consumables? Consumable goods are products that consumers use as needed over a relatively short period of time until the supply is gone or replenished. These are the opposite of durable goods, things that last and that we tend to keep around for a long time. We need some consumables, just not as many as advertisers try to sell to us. And often we keep more consumables on hand than we will use in a short period of time, thus making our clutter problem worse. When facing a stock of consumables in your home, ask yourself these questions. 1. Do I have room to store these items out of sight, or are they in plain view and distracting to me? 2. If I keep all these products, how quickly will I go through them? 3. Do I have the kind of personality that will enable me to use them to the end of the pile? Or is my personality type such that I will forget about the supplies and buy more even though the first pile hasn't run out? 4. How accessible are the consumables when I do run out? If they're easy to replace, you don't need to keep as many around. 5. Do I have unopened bottles of cleaners and packages of supplies that I could donate, or are they all partially used? Simple is beautiful. Throwing out unwanted cosmetics or getting rid of the extra blow dryer, these kinds of actions might not seem like a big deal to you. Well, let me tell you, minimizing your bathroom is a countercultural act. Ask yourself why we tend to have so much bathroom stuff in the first place. Marketers are appealing to our base fears and insecurities, suggesting that we'll repel others with our body odors and grungy looks. On the other hand, they want us to think that if we use their products, we'll be beautiful, sexy, and alluring. Catherine Aschenberg, author of The Dirt on Clean, put it in historical perspective. Advertising created a morbid worry about offending, and more soaps, deodorants, and mouthwashes. Use Listerine and you would avoid the fate of being often a bridesmaid but never a bride, rushed in to assuage the anxiety. In the 21st century, little has changed. Soaps proliferate, the intimate hygiene products multiply, and our goal seems to be to eradicate every natural smell from our bodies and then apply tropical aromas like vanilla and melon. The average U.S. citizen spends $325 annually on toiletries. We're talking about a $35 billion industry. So there's a lot of money at stake. Is it possible we're going too far? Maybe just a little bit? Now, let's be clear about this. I'm all for cleanliness, and there's nothing wrong with highlighting our natural beauty. But there is plenty of room for us to become more savvy about consumerism in this area, as in any other. Buying too many personal cleaning and beauty supplies is expensive and clutters up our homes. And it's just not necessary. Our time and money can be better spent in other places. Overusing body cleaning products can even be harmful to us. Washing removes natural oils and can leave skin irritated. Aluminum in some antiperspirants and chemicals in deodorants can be toxic. Antibacterial washes remove good bacteria from the skin and can reduce our immunity to some diseases. At the same time we're making over our bathrooms, let's make over our attitudes toward cleanliness and beauty. How many of the items in our bathrooms are the result of external, societal pressure urging us to conform? It is liberating to remove this thinking from our minds and those products from our bathrooms. Let's stick with the simple, the natural, and the necessary instead. There's no need to look at your bathroom as a workshop for remaking your outer appearance into an image you think others will approve of. An improved attitude can help you maintain the minimalism of your bathrooms. If you're more rational about cleanliness and beauty, you'll be less tempted to overaccumulate and overuse personal cleaning and beauty supplies. You can let go of society's bias about what you must look like at the same time you let go of society's idea of how much you must own. Now that's beautiful. Inspiration. Jessica's story. The answer was less. I have lusted over a spa-like, Pinterest-worthy bathroom ever since I had my own home. The idea of getting that spa feeling inside my own four walls was too tempting to resist. For years, I've peppered the room with odds and ends here and there in an attempt to create that elusive mood I was after. I collected high-end products and pretty much anything that promised to transform me into a Victoria's Secret model. My bathroom was jam-packed with half-used bottles, samples, and unwanted gift sets. It wasn't until I decluttered my bathroom that I finally got that calm, relaxing feeling I'd been trying to create. The answer to my problem, unbeknownst to me at the time, had always been less. It never occurred to me that the way to create a retreat-like space with a luxurious feel to it was to fill it with less stuff rather than more. Jessica Rose Williams, England. Step-by-step minimizing for your laundry room. Before we finish thinking about how to minimize the cleaning spaces in the home, let's not forget to address the laundry room. This room is perhaps the most purely utilitarian room in the house. Normally, it's got one purpose, to serve as a cleaning station for our laundry. So in minimizing it, we should strive to make it as efficient as possible for its simple use. Step one, remove things that don't belong. When a laundry room becomes a storage area for all sorts of unneeded possessions that have nothing to do with laundry, it becomes less efficient and less enjoyable to work in. If you look about your laundry room and find objects that have migrated in for no good reason, ask yourself where else in the home they belong and move them there. Or maybe you can do without them altogether. Step two, take down unhelpful decorations. I don't feel a need to decorate our laundry room with wall pictures or anything of that sort. But if you want to decorate yours, just make sure the decorations aren't overdone. That only produces a cluttery effect. Also, make sure they aren't presenting a damaging message. I know a woman with a sign in her laundry room that says, "It's tough living in the fast lane when you're married to a speed bump." Cute, clever, and worth a chuckle, I suppose. But I often wonder how reading that sign every day might affect her approach to her marriage, even in small ways. We might put up cynical or critical messages in any room of the house, but somehow these seem to be particularly prevalent in laundry rooms. I get the humor, I really do. But if we're going to be putting up signs on our walls in our own homes, shouldn't they be encouraging us to do our work well and selflessly instead? Step three, remove unnecessary laundry products, tools, and accessories. The market is filled with laundry products, pre-treatment and stain removers, bleach, laundry detergents, liquid, powder, or pod for white clothes, dark clothes, or bright clothes, color catchers, fabric softeners and fabric conditioners, fabric deodorizers, and starch and anti-static spray. You don't need all of these. Just keep the basics that you'll use over and over. In our house, we keep one stain remover, one laundry detergent that is suited for our washer type and works with all colors of clothing, one bottle of bleach, and one box of dryer sheets. That's it, and we could probably get rid of the dryer sheets. In addition to laundry cleaning products, some of us have also accumulated laundry tools and accessories of different kinds, such as a lint brush or lint roller, clothesline, clothespins, iron, ironing board, drying rack, hampers or baskets, hangers, and washer bags. Got any of these that you can do without? Maybe you can open up space, allowing you to move about more freely in your laundry room and be more comfortable as you do the work the room is intended for. Step four, Put the supplies you need where they're easy to reach. Once you're down to just the supplies you're going to use with your laundry, organize them neatly and logically. They might be in boxes, bins, or cabinets, or on shelves. The laundry room is one of the few areas in the house where I think it can make sense to keep things out in the open. Usually I advocate keeping smaller items hidden in drawers and cabinets to give a room a cleaner look, but since the whole laundry room is typically closed off from regular view, it's not so important to hide the individual items. That's why, in our house, we have a shelf above our washer and dryer where we keep the laundry products within easy reach. Here, convenience is no fallacy. Nobility in your humblest rooms. The bathroom and the laundry room may be humble, utilitarian spaces, but let me point out a simple fact you may have overlooked. They can also be noble places. If you're cleaning yourself and attending to your own grooming regularly, without overemphasizing appearance, you're making an effort to present yourself well to the world. If you're taking the time to relax in a bubble bath periodically, you're recognizing that life is not all about activity and achievement and that there are suitable times to de-stress and meditate. If you're monitoring your weight on a scale or taking vitamin supplements kept in your bathroom, you're pursuing the value of health. If you're storing medical supplies that you can grab when a child wakes up sick in the night, you're prepared to bring relief. If you're bathing an infant or perhaps a disabled spouse or elderly parent, you're giving comfort while serving a basic human need. If you're teaching and modeling a simple approach to health and beauty for your kids, you're helping to start them out well in life. If you're going through the routine of washing your family's clothes week in and week out, they may not thank you, but they owe you. Let me say it. Thank you for caring, and thank you for making the most of these spaces in your home by keeping them tidy and uncluttered. It's better to have extra time on your hands and extra money in your pocket than extra stuff in your closet. Hashtag minimalist home. Minimizing checklist. How will you know when you've cleared out enough clutter and excess from your bathrooms and laundry room? Ask yourself these questions. For the bathrooms, have I done my best to create spaces where my family can relax and wash away life's little stresses? Have I removed all the things from the bathrooms that we do not need? Are the countertops clean and tidy? Are the drawers and cabinets organized, allowing needed products to be accessed quickly? Do these spaces empower my family members and me with confidence to feel good about ourselves and the day ahead? For the laundry room, have I arranged this room in an efficient way? Do the surroundings in this space encourage me to serve my family with love and selflessness? Chapter 7. The Heart of the Home. Decluttering the kitchen and dining room. As I mentioned earlier, the nonprofit that my wife and I started with our minimalist dividend is an orphanage alternative called the Hope Effect, where orphaned children can live in a home that mimics the family. When I engaged an architect to design the first structure for this nonprofit, I told her, we want to communicate security and community even in the way we design our homes. Everything has to be intentional. The result was a home with a large kitchen and a dedicated eating area. These are the places families grow closest together, our architect said. So true, isn't it? When I first became minimalist, I investigated what other minimalists were choosing to eliminate and keep. One thing I noticed was that some people kept very little related to cooking and eating. I remember one couple who owned only 2 plates and 2 forks. I knew right away this extreme wasn't for us. For sure, we would get rid of a lot of things from our kitchen and dining room. But I didn't want to eliminate so much that we lost the purpose of cooking and eating as a family. In fact, I wanted our minimizing to enhance the joy of being together with others around food, both for us as a family and for the people we invite into our home. At the time, we had 3 different groups from our church who would come over to meet in our home regularly. And I was also meeting with 2 engaged couples at our home to provide premarital counseling. We wanted to be able to host these people and others for informal meals. To do that, we wanted to keep a dining table and some chairs, as well as some utensils for cooking food and plates to put the food on. Meal hospitality is still a priority for us, along with serving nutritious dinners for our family of 4. So these values have guided our minimalism in the kitchen and dining room. Nevertheless, I'm not sure I can quite express what is so basic, so right, so utterly human about cooking and eating together. As far back as you can go in history, you find human beings gathering around tables, or just open fires, for the purpose of eating together. Offering food and water is an instinctive act of courtesy in almost every culture around the world. In the Bible and Jewish Christian tradition, breaking bread together is perhaps both the humblest and the most meaningful reflection of unity. Ayelet Fishback, a professor of behavioral science at the University of Chicago, said, "Food really connects people. Food is about bringing something into the body. And to eat the same food suggests that we are both willing to bring the same thing into our bodies. People just feel closer to people who are eating the same food as they do." And then trust, cooperation, these are just consequences of feeling close to someone. In our modern homes, the kitchen so often seems to be the place for spontaneous, informal gatherings. There, we can talk together while keeping our hands busy in an atmosphere of warmth emanating from the oven, rising steam, enticing odors, cheerful clinks and clatter, and the natural beauty of fruits and vegetables, all seasoned with the sauce of anticipation about the meal to come. A dining area is where we sit down to share the food and to share the time that it takes to eat the food with others. Couples catch up with each other at the dinner table. Families review their days, take care of family business, and joke around the meal. At the table, guests may be welcomed in an even friendlier way than is possible in the living room. There's a kind of everyday ritual about eating together that is reassuring in its repetition. Holiday meals are our domestic pageantry. Therefore, it's a great idea to clog up our kitchens with every gadget that's been advertised, to the point where we get frustrated looking for what we need, with the countertops meanwhile being messy, cluttered, and ugly, right? And to crowd our dining room with so much furniture and stores of tableware options that it's uncomfortable to eat there, right? Obviously not. These spaces serve their purposes so much better when they are kept simple and inviting, letting us focus on the practical cooking tasks before us and the relational joys of sharing food together. With these 2 rooms, we're getting to more difficult areas to minimize, because they, the kitchen in particular, tend to collect all sorts of items that we're going to have to sort through when we minimize. But you'll find that uncluttering your kitchen and dining area in your home is so worth it, because here you are uncluttering the heart of the home. Minimalist home value. Hospitality. Mingling in the kitchen during food preparation and then moving to the dining area to sit down and enjoy the results. That's got to be one of the greatest ways to experience the simple joy of living. And because they're uncluttered and ready to be useful to us, a minimized kitchen and dining room help us foster the inner life of the home, the relationships within it. My next door neighbor recently told me a story of having a married couple over for dinner. This couple had been feuding with one another for some time. They brought their divorce papers with them ready to sign, the wife from next door told me. By the end of the meal, they had put them away, at least for the moment. This was an intentional use of their dining room to play a healing role in their friends' lives. The same day I heard that story, our daughter's friend was over for a play date, and because it was getting late, we invited her to stay for dinner. This friend is from a dysfunctional home, and her young face is beginning to show the pain of it. For this one evening meal, around our dining room table, she got to see how a healthy family interacts with one another. We didn't plan it, and obviously this one meal won't solve all of her problems at home. But maybe in a small way, our interaction that evening will help her in the future when she has a family of her own. And then there's the hospitality we don't always think of as hospitality. The kindness and attention we pay to our own loved ones whom we live with every day. Making a meal and making time to share it around the family table is an act of love towards those we'd miss desperately if they weren't living in our homes and eating at our tables anymore. A meal together is an act of love. A minimalist home can be a home that's always primed to say, welcome. Creating your home's culture in the kitchen. There is something refreshing and life-giving about a clean, uncluttered kitchen. In fact, it is one of my favorite benefits of a minimalist lifestyle. It sets the tone and culture for the home. It communicates calm and order. It promotes opportunity and possibility. It saves time and ensures cleanliness. Yet, it is one of the more difficult places in the home to keep uncluttered. There are several reasons for this being such a difficult space to minimize. The kitchen is usually located in a high-traffic area of the home. The purpose of the room requires messes to be made during its use. The kitchen is often used as a collection area for odds and ends, such as mail. Kitchen gear is one of the areas where marketers have gone overboard in promoting stuff we supposedly need. Actually, they need our hard-earned dollars. Here, our culture of excess is clearly on display. So, how crowded are our kitchens? One consumer expert wrote, "In the United States, the typical large kitchen in 2004 contained 330 different and a total of 1,019 items. Even a small one had a total of 655 items, three times as many as in 1948. Waffle irons, blenders, grapefruit spoons, and espresso cups are all competing for space. Countertops have consequently been getting bigger, as have drawers. The ideal of the eat-in kitchen, where hosts can demonstrate their culinary skills, has added recipe books and specialized equipment, even if these are rarely used. The proliferation of kitchen appliances is one sign of the extremes of accumulation to which we've gone. The number of appliances, including but not restricted to kitchen appliances, purchased around the world has increased steadily, growing by 35% in just the decade spanning 2006 and 2016. Today, about a quarter of U.S. homes have two refrigerators, the most popular home appliance. If we were getting good use out of all these appliances, we could at least make a case for keeping them. But is that really what's happening? Research in the United Kingdom showed that two out of three households surveyed owned appliances that had been used an average of six times, while 10% of appliances had never been touched after being purchased. Britons own an estimated 123 million bread makers, coffee machines, food processors, and other kitchen devices that gather dust on the shelves. When you think about your own kitchen, what kinds of clutter come to mind? Are you one of those people who have been seduced by shiny gadgets or specialized tools that aren't really necessary? Do you have a lot of duplicates from when you got married and merged your kitchen supplies with your spouse's? Have you accumulated an extensive cookbook collection, even though you use only one or two favorite cookbooks regularly? If your kitchen is anything like most people's, you can get rid of a lot there. Think about what you want your kitchen to accomplish for you. Is it to enable you to cook tasty, healthy meals for your family without too much fuss? Is it to be easy to keep clean so it offers you a sense of peace and doesn't waste your time? Is it to serve as a comfortable space for family or friends to keep you company as you cook? Be clear on these goals and use them to guide you as you ask, "Do I really need this?" And minimize your kitchen. At this point, if you fancy yourself a chef, have spurts where cooking provides you comfort like nothing else, or just love good food, you may be nervous that minimizing your kitchen is going to ruin your workshop for culinary creation. Relax. It's like minimizing anywhere else in the house. Minimizing in the kitchen doesn't take away from you, but rather gives. You can uncover what's been obscured about the joy of cooking by removing the excess objects from your kitchen workspace. Minimalism will help you fall back in love with cooking, or maybe even fall in love for the first time. Now you're cooking. From the start of our minimalism journey, I dreaded the day we would get to the kitchen. So many gadgets in so many drawers and so many pots, pans, and bowls on so many shelves, I had no idea where to start. But help arrived one afternoon while I was cruising the internet. I found an article in the New York Times titled, "A No-Frills Kitchen Still Cooks," in which professional chef Mark Bittman told how he decked out an entire kitchen for about $300, including every cooking utensil someone would need to cook like a pro. Not only did he list every utensil you'd need to create even the most elegant of dishes, but he listed exactly how much to spend on it. Throughout the piece, he promoted this philosophy: it needs only to be functional, not prestigious, lavish, or expensive. When the Saturday designated for minimizing our kitchen arrived, I set aside a significant part of the day for the project. I knew it would require intentional focus and energy. I was right, but the project did take less time than I had imagined. Similar to what we had already done in other rooms, we pulled every item out of every drawer and cabinet and began sorting the contents into piles. Keep, relocate, and discard. The discard pile was further subdivided into sell, recycle, and trash piles. With the help of the New York Times article, we created a list of every cooking or baking utensil we needed to keep. It's a good strategy in any crowded part of the home. Rather than asking what you can remove from the area, start with an essentials list and keep only those items. It worked beautifully for us. By the time we were done, the kitchen no longer presented the clutter cavalcade it had before. An experience